So, you know, one of the most interesting and perplexing kind of trends in the world right now that I'm having a lot of trouble relating to is this whole thing of esports. Like, I love sports. I love watching all kinds of sports. I love watching track meets and hockey games and basketball and, you know, like cricket while we were in England. I mean, I like watching all kinds of competition and sport. But it's really hard for me to understand this kind of just fixation on watching somebody sit there and play a video game. And I can't believe how popular this stuff is getting. I mean, millions and millions of people are participating, filling up stadiums and venues to watch people play video games. And I mean, the revenue for these is like getting up close to $1 billion, like 905 million this year in revenues in esports. I just like, that's a lot of money. I just don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, esports, as you said, they're due next year to surpass the $1 billion mark in revenue. But if you talk about sedentary sports, there's one that has surpassed esports by far. Do you know in the game of poker online is a 40 billion with a B dollar industry.
Yeah, I mean that's another one. There we have it. Just people, we're watching people play a card game and we're calling it a sport. I understand it's a contest. It's, you know, there's a lot of things involved, but I mean really it's just so interesting how it's kind of packaged now like a competitive sport. I mean, you got endorsements, you got personalities, you've got people, fans following certain players. I mean, it's pretty big business.
Well, one of the things that's made poker so attractive to the common person is the idea of luck. Luck is attractive to people. In the game of baseball, not everybody can pitch a ball 100 miles an hour, and no matter what, I know I can't go out and pitch the ball like that. No matter how much I practice, I know I'm never going to beat LeBron James in basketball or throw the ball better than Tom Brady. But in the world of poker, I can beat even the highest money earners in a game of poker if I get a good hand, if I'm lucky. Over a period of time, there's no doubt the skilled poker players of the world will end up beating me over a body of work, over a long time. But poker has its roots deep in America. And poker isn't an incredibly popular sedentary sport which precedes this esport generation. And as it just so happens, I used to work with the father of one of the greatest poker players in all the world.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of questions for Darren Elias. I want to know how this whole thing works, and I want to know how he got started in it. This is a kid that was around actual sports his whole life, and I'm looking forward to talking to him about this whole thing of a sport where not only are the people watching it sitting there, but the people playing it are too. Welcome to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century on Blue Ridge Public Radio. I'm Dr. Marcia Mount Shoup.
And I'm Coach John Shoup.
John's coached at the highest levels of the game of football for 26 years.
And Marcia is an author, theologian, and minister.
And we're glad you've joined us to go deep into some of the most pressing issues of our time.
On Going Deep, we go beyond the sound bites and highlight reels. 1992, in the early 90s, I was a football coach at Vanderbilt University with Bill Elias. Bill was our defensive ends coach, and after Vanderbilt, I went on to coach in the NFL, and Bill went to LSU and then up later to Gannon University. But Bill's son, Darren Elias, who was age 6, 7, and 8 while we were in Nashville, went on to become a great swimmer, a water polo player of all things in Erie, Pennsylvania, and then went to college at the University of the Redlands in San Bernardino, California, where of all things he graduated with a bachelor's degree in creative writing. 10 years later, Darren Elias is an American professional poker player who holds the record for the most world poker titles with 4. Simply stated, Darren Elias is one of the greatest poker players on the planet. Darren, at age 32, has already earned over $3.8 million online and over $6 million in live tournaments. And Darren is our guest today on Going Deep, who's going to help us kind of navigate the world of poker. Welcome to Going Deep, Darren.
Hey, happy to be here. Nice to be on the show with you guys, John and Marcia. And I'm excited to tell you guys what I can about what I do.
Well, we are so glad you took some time out from what sounds like a pretty exciting life, but I know from all the years in professional football, people think that's exciting, but it's also can be a grind. And
yeah,
we're really grateful that you've taken some time out to talk to us. It looks like, you know, a sort of an unlikely story. You were a football coach's son. You are a football coach's son, and you have a degree in creative writing from a liberal arts, college. And now you're a poker player. How did you get started playing poker?
Well, I always had an affinity for games and like puzzles, and I liked math. I liked playing cards. So I think when I was maybe 12 or 13, I started playing cards online, but not poker. I would play hearts or spades on like yahoo.com. And I really liked that. I have a kind of an obsessive personality where if I get into something and I'm playing a game, I do it nonstop and I want to be the best at it. And I really study it. I'm not like a part-time gamer. Mm-hmm. So eventually when I was 16 or 17, we started playing in the neighborhood, like a $5 poker game, Texas Hold'em in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I always did well. I kind of enjoyed it a little more than everybody else. And that was kind of how I got hooked. And around that time, it became possible to play online poker for real money, too.
Mm-hmm.
So once I was able to sit in my own home and kind of secretly play online poker for real money, that was a big turning point.
So you're a teenager, you're playing online poker and making money and obviously kind of figuring out, hey, I'm pretty good at this. And plus I enjoy doing it. What did your parents?
It was amazing. I was going to say, I met a lot of resistance from my father.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't blame him. My dad ran a pretty tight ship when it comes to that vices and that kind of thing. And I don't really blame him for giving me a hard time. I'm a 16, 17-year-old dummy who wants to gamble on the internet in his eyes. And he had no idea if I was any good, if I was going to win. I mean, at that point, I didn't know I would end up being a professional poker player. I was just doing something I liked. And, there were times where I'd be playing on a computer. He'd kick me off, make me get off, like, no more gambling, that kind of thing. but eventually, as I got older and started to show some results, he did his research and kind of, like, respected that, oh, this is a legitimate gig. It's like a business. And poker's different than a lot of other forms of gambling.
Well, I've always admired your dad. I think he's a solid guy. So I'm glad that he was able to shift gears, but I'm sure it was a little bit of a growing edge for him.
Yeah, I certainly had to earn it before he respected me doing poker, that's for sure.
So just make the jump now for us. You've painted a really vivid picture of this becoming a really big part of your life. When did it kind of morph into a career?
Definitely during college, because when I was playing in high school, it wasn't a lot of money. It might be hundreds of dollars I would win. And in college, when I was playing on the internet, it became possible to win real money. I think freshman or sophomore year, I might have made something like $200,000 in a semester. And I thought like, oh, this is real money. This is more than I could make if I were to get my degree and get a job and do something that I might not like as much. That was kind of my line of thinking. And once I had that line of thinking, I played online poker nonstop, and I kind of put college on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
I was a math and physics major, so I was in these pretty challenging classes. And I changed my major to creative writing, where I could kind of work at my own pace and have these longer projects. And it was kind of that sophomore, junior year of college that I kind of made the switch.
So I love that story. Like, it was sort of a pragmatic decision. Okay, I'm not going to be able to do math and physics, you know, but I can probably swing creative writing, you know, that really says a lot about your ability to kind of think on your feet, but also make some long-term plans. You're not just an obsessive personality. You are able to work your plan as well, which is inspiring.
I remember pretty vividly. I was up to like 2 or 3 a.m. and then I had like a quantum physics class or something at 9 a.m. in the morning, and I'm sitting there with three kids and I'm like, I can't be here. This isn't for me. And I was just thinking about poker.
If you can talk a little bit now, let's kind of go into the culture of professional poker players. Now, online, you've made a lot of money. At live tournaments, you've made a lot of money as well. Can you talk about your move from online poker into the live tournament poker, and what are some of the differences and what are some of the similarities between online and live tournaments?
Yeah, absolutely. Online is kind of how a lot of the top players now got their start, because it's like, we say it's almost like a time chamber, because online, you can play as many games as you want at the same time. So most professionals are playing 6-8 tables at once. So you're seeing a lot more hands, where a professional live player might see maybe 500,000 or a million hands in his whole life, where online players, sometimes some of us see millions of hands a year. So we're kind of learning at a faster rate. And then when we move to live, it's kind of a transition. You have to slow down, because you have only one table. You're playing with these 9 other people, and there's more information there. You get to see who you're playing against. You get to see, are they old? Are they young? What are they wearing? Like, all that stuff in poker is information. Might be able to glean something about how somebody plays. Where online, you're kind of just looking at a screen and it's a name, you know. Where live, there's just so much more information.
Is there more nuance in the live game? I.e., you see players that wear dark glasses, hats pulled down low. I've noticed you play sometimes with an earpiece, it appears. Can you talk about that?
The live, we call them live tells. That's always going to be an aspect of the game where a player might do something physically to give away information about whether they're weak or strong or what they might have. And all the things you'll see, like hats, sunglasses, are usually to cover that up, to try to minimize any effect where you give away information. And my headphones, those are just kind of to pass the time. I listen to music, and we play some long days, about noon to 2 a.m. usually. And sometimes I don't want to hear the conversation at the table.
Really? That's interesting.
Or I just want to hear a little music.
It's fascinating to think about this online, as you say, time chamber, where people are kind of in the privacy of their own homes. They're online, they're playing all these different tables at once, and they might play millions of hands of poker. Is this something where there's regulation of it? I just think with online things like that, where there's such a, you know, kind of massive influx of participants, wouldn't it be easy for somebody to cheat or to be, I don't know, I mean, do you know they're all people or are they, how does that work?
Well, it is a little scary in that the online stuff is a bit unregulated, and most of the companies that run these online sites are offshore. They're not based in the U.S., and it is their loose regulations, and this stuff never goes to court or anything if there's a if there's an incident. And there has been cheating incidents, but as a professional and all professionals that play online, like, we do trust the system and that it is random. On the whole, nobody can see your cards and cheat you like that. And the biggest concern now online is bots. Like, people have created bots that play poker pretty well. And if you can just turn on your computer and let a bot play poker all day and make passive income, that's a pretty lucrative gig, and there can be many of them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the biggest concern nowadays.
And I wonder, is that pushing more people into the live game, or do you have to really be at the tip top of the game to even get in these live tournaments? Talk to us bit about how you are able to participate in the live tournaments.
Yeah, that's I guess it might be a misconception about some people. They'll ask, did you qualify for the World Series of Poker? How does it work? It's actually open to anybody. So if you wanted to play the World Series of Poker main event next year, all you have to do is go to the Rio with $10,000 and you're in. So anyone can go play a poker tournament. There's a couple invite only events that come along every once in a while that are exclusive, but in general, anybody can play a poker tournament, and they go as small as $100, $50. You can go to your local casino and play a daily tournament for not much money at all. Yeah, about the online thing, a lot of people just play for fun. They're not too concerned with that. They come home from work, they just want to play a couple hours of poker and for small stakes. And the recreational players, I think, are less concerned with that kind of stuff.
Right.
Is there a regulation game in the world of poker? I.e., does America play one brand, Canada another, maybe in Europe another brand, or is it all the exact same game?
The game is the same, but there's been some government regulation since in 2011. They separated. They made online poker illegal in the U.S. So for a couple of years we had no poker, and then now they've started to introduce legislation where we can play again. But we can't play with the rest of the world. We're in, they call it ring fence game, where right now I can only play with people in New Jersey, Nevada, and Delaware, and they're gonna slowly legalize it state by state and connect the states. But compared to what it used to be in 2011, you could play with the whole world, and it was a much better game back then. And a lot of people are doubtful, I guess, that it'll ever get back to that stage because of government regulation.
If you were in a live tournament, though, would in a live tournament in Atlantic City, would that Texas Hold'em have the same rules and regulations as the Caribbean, as Europe?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what's kind of fun about it. I mean, anywhere you go in the world, it's the same game. You're playing with different people. They might be speaking a different language, but it's still, you're getting two cards, you're seeing the flop, and the rules are 99% the same.
So is there a country that's like the pinnacle of this, that where it's, you know, the Shangri-La of poker playing, you can go and it's really the best context for being successful?
Well, I mean, there's definitely some locales that are like famous and have really big games. I remember when I used to travel to Europe, I got to play in Monte Carlo in Monaco, and that was a real experience, just so opulent. They have these huge casinos where you have to wear a suit and tie to go play. Like, it felt like something out of like a James Bond movie. Right now they have really big games in China too, in Macau, which is kind of like a Chinese Las Vegas, and that's where I would say a lot of the biggest games in the world are happening right now. And then obviously you have Las Vegas. The Bellagio in Las Vegas is kind of the mecca of American poker.
Is there like a community? Like, I would imagine, you know, good poker players want to be able to kind of maintain a persona, you know, at the table. Are you close with other poker players, or do you keep your distance? Are you like this kind of mystical personality that people don't know very well, you know?
Yeah, I'm probably more like that, like the latter, the mystical form. I have a couple of close friends in the poker world, but I don't keep a real big circle.
Yeah.
And I'd say more players do, though, and they have a lot of almost like support groups where they have like group chats and they're going to talk about strategy, things like that, where I'm less a part of that. And I maybe have one or two friends that I'll pal around with at these things. And that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would imagine it would be kind of a part of the strategy of your game as to whether you let people get to know you very much or not.
Yeah. And I with friends, I always keep a few close ones rather than a lot of ones that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't enjoy the company of fools. A lot of these guys, every poker stop, they're having these 10-way dinners, and I'd rather just be on my own, focused on the game. Or sure. By myself. I'm not too social with that kind of thing.
Well, I'm interested then, how do you practice? How do you train? Do you cross train with other kind of mind bending games to exercise your brain muscle?
I have. I a couple years ago I got into chess, and there are some like principles that apply across different games, but for the most part, I'm working through hands, like poker hands, in my head, and kind of seeing, could I have played this hand better? Could I have done anything differently to win more money? And then we also have some software nowadays where it's almost like a bot, which will tell you what it would have done in this situation, what some possible strategies could be. And a lot of the top players are working with this kind of software now to check themselves and to open up different lines of thinking where what a computer might do with these cards in this situation, which is pretty interesting.
With regards to strategy, do you then kind of self-scout yourself so other people couldn't say, well, I know this is what Darren does in this situation, or do you kind of know what your own tendencies are and try to bust those, or do you scout other players as well and know, for instance, what another top player's strategies are and try to play off of those?
Yeah, that's definitely a big part of the game. And as a poker player, you're always cognizant of your own image, like how people are perceiving you at the table. Mm-hmm. And, That's something that's always in the back of your head, and it could be different from day to day. Like, you have how you play, but people haven't seen how you've played your whole career. Sometimes they've only seen how you played for an hour or two, and they're going to base their play off of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more about the recent things that you've shown, where if I show down a big bluff and I lose and I get called, I have to worry that now the whole table saw me bluff, and I might be a little less likely to do it again because they think I'm crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's so
interesting. And
that's
for scouting opponents. Yeah. Scouting opponents, everybody plays kind of their own style. And that's something that I really enjoy, trying to break down how people play and how people think. And it's really just about paying attention when you're playing, watching people's patterns. Because even the best players in the world have tendencies and they have things they like to do. More than others. So that's more of an attention to detail thing.
So is there like, you know, you look at the lineup of who you're going to play and you're like, oh man, that guy's really good. This is going to be tough. Like, do you have a coach or somebody that you strategize with, or is it really just you kind of thinking on your feet in the moment, deal with what's going on when you get there kind of thing?
Yeah. It's just me on my own. Sometimes in these bigger tournaments, as you get farther, day two, day three, day four, you can see who's going to be at your table the next day. So I might take a look at the list of players at my table. But I kind of have my own, like, I guess, data file in my head on these players, how they play, what they might do. So I'm not working with the team like that. But, for example, the World Series main event where you get a I don't know if you guys are familiar with, that's the big one in Las Vegas where they used to delay the final table. So you would play down to nine and then wait till November and finish it. And all these guys would build a whole team of professionals and do coaching, and they'll watch tape on other players and run simulations.
Wow.
So when you have a lot of prep time, that stuff becomes possible. But for us, most of these tournaments, you finish at 2 a.m. and then you're playing at noon the next day. So there's not too much prep.
So to me, it's interesting, just again, as we've spent time in the industry of football and kind of how that whole world works. And it's interesting to me to hear these kind of ins and outs of the way the system works. And I'm just wondering, like, is it something where you get endorsements and it's a fully professionalized situation where it's more than just how you play the game, but the whole industry around the game, like the kind of cards you buy or the table that they have, or you see what I'm saying? Like there, it seems like they're, that's part of the industrial complex of sport, is that they're, that all these little cottage industries and many industries grow up around it. Is there stuff like that in poker?
Yeah, but there used to be, I would say, more corporate involvement with, like, maybe 10 years ago, it was a little easier for players to get endorsements and kind of find other, like, revenue streams from companies and deals with, like you're saying, playing cards or clothing, like if you wear clothing on a TV final table. But nowadays, it's pretty tough for opportunities for players to get sponsored, where there might only be 20 or 30 players in the world who have kind of like a good deal with the company where they're getting an actual salary or something like that. And for me and for most professionals, we have to win to make money. And it's kind of just the card game. Mm-hmm. And the other stuff, the corporate deals, it kind of goes on between the poker tours and companies, and we're not really involved.
So do you have fans? Do you have people that are like, oh, I love Darren Elias, I like to watch him play, or...
Yeah, over the last couple of years, I've been recognized more in casinos, taking some photos, and anytime you win a big tournament, you'll get some support online from fans, which is always nice to hear. And yeah, it's definitely cool. There are poker fans, especially in the U.S., and they watch it on TV, then they see you in a casino and they want to say hi. It's nice.
Yeah.
Is there a season? Or what does your yearly calendar look like? And do you organize that yourself? Or do you have a manager / agent that kind of helps you with travel arrangements? Kind of the comparison that I think of is with golf, maybe. You're kind of an individual contractor and deciding what tournaments you want to enter.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about your yearly calendar and travel schedule a little bit?
Yeah. I'm doing all that stuff on my own. I guess I'd be an individual contractor there, where I do my own travel. And what will happen is, say for the World Poker Tour, they'll release a season of events. So maybe like 6 months of events, they'll have the dates and where they are. And then I'll kind of circle those on my calendar. I know I'll be at those events on those days. And then there's a couple annual events. Usually these tournaments are in the same city at the same time every year. So I know I'm going to LA in February every year. I know I'm going to Las Vegas in the summer for the World Series of Poker. I'm kind of going to the same locales at the same times every year at this point. And there's a number of different poker tours. There's the World Poker Tour. There's the Party Poker Live Series. There's the World Series of Poker. So there's kind of these different competing tournament tours. And I stick mostly to the World Poker Tour because it's in the U.S. and I'm with my family. I'm not traveling a ton internationally anymore, so those are the events where the schedule comes out, and I'm kind of starting to make flights and book hotels for those events.
And do you, like a golfer or a tennis player, do you try to gauge your game? Like, is there a way that I don't know how to say it.
You peak at
Yeah,
a
golfers
time.
Try to peak at a certain time, you know, when the majors come. tennis mm-hmm. players try to peak at the four, you know, to win a grand slam.
Yeah.
Is there any thought of that in poker?
A little bit, I guess, with training. I never thought about it like that. Like, we used to do that in swimming, too. If we had a big meet, we would kind of rest up
right.
and call
taper.
It tapering and
yeah.
try to peak and do your best time at the biggest event. Well, I guess what might happen is if you know you have a really big event coming up, that you might do a little extra studying or something like that, or try to do a little more prep work. But it's certainly not as important as in a physical sport like golf or tennis. And it's more important just to stay fresh and stay rested when you're not playing, so that when you do, like, for example, and I'm home for 2 days now, and on Wednesday I'll go play probably 8 or 9 days of straight poker. So I'm just trying to rest and recharge and get my mind right, because so much of it is mental to play 8 days of poker.
At a table, were you drinking coffee or Red Bull or something to stay alert?
How about water?
Or go to, you know, how do you call time out to go to the bathroom? Things like that. I mean, really, some particulars. I mean, 12 hours, 14 hours straight sitting at a table would be challenging.
Definitely coffee and water. I just started drinking coffee a couple of years ago, but that's become a staple of my poker diet. You get 15 minutes every 2 hours, and that's not a problem for me usually with going to the bathroom, but I see some of the older players
yeah.
sometimes. If you've got to go, you leave the table for a minute, and they're gonna fold every hand for you while you're in the bathroom. So you are losing a little bit of money if you can't make it 2 hours.
Yeah,
it's a disincentive. Does your wife play poker?
No, she's not a poker player. She used to be a teacher, and since she's taking some time off now since we had our daughter.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, did you all meet somehow through the world of poker? Did you meet in school or?
Interestingly enough, yeah, we actually met in Atlantic City when I was there for a poker tournament.
Yeah.
So she was there kind of for a night out with her friends, and I was there for a poker tournament, and met at a bar about 10 years ago, and now we're here.
Well, that's your biggest payoff yet.
Yeah. I should tell her that.
Yeah.
So, in the world of poker, you're 31 years old. Would you be considered an older player, a younger player? In poker, it seems to me, is the game you could play as much money as you've made in the last 10 years, you could play this all well into your 70s, no?
Yeah, I'd say I'm probably in the middle of the pack age-wise. A lot of the top players in the world are kind of around my age because we all got started online at the same
time.
Yeah,
yeah.
And because of, at least in the U.S., now that online poker is illegal or not the same, that we're not getting this fresh new crop of young players who have been playing online that are good. It kind of doesn't exist anymore.
That's interesting.
So
there was a window, yeah.
The lower age threshold is probably 28, 29, where that's the end of that generation, my generation, I guess. Like 28 to 32, 33 is kind of, because we all got our start around 21 about 10 years ago.
Wow, that is so interesting to think about how it's not refreshing the same way. But I mean, I would think if they ever did open that door again, you're going to have a huge wash of, because
yeah,
I mean, kids are even more now online doing stuff, and that's kind of how they spend their leisure time is online, you know?
Yeah. And it's sad to see too. It's only an American phenomenon. Like when you go to Europe or you play these other top players, in Germany and Spain and France, they still have these 21, 22-year-old superstar online players that are coming up because they're able to play still.
Sure.
And in the U.S., you have to leave the country if you want to play, so it's tough for us.
So let's take a step back as we kind of finish up our conversation, and two things strike me as I listen to you. One is that there's this kind of this phenomena of things where you're, you know, you're sitting still, you're not, it's not, you know, kind of traditionally athletic, but it is sport. And it's actually become a spectator sport. Like, people watch it, people follow it. That seems to kind of grow out of, you know, American culture, in that people are more sedentary. They're more watching screens. They're more, you know, kind of routinized to that kind of activity. That's one thing. How I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, kind of how that particular part of American culture has helped this to be successful. But then the other thing I'm listening to is this American reaction against that is not really about, oh, we need to get out and be outside and, you know, do that, do other sports. It's more the kind of vestiges of this kind of puritanical, like, gambling is wrong, so we have to control it. And and so it's this kind of check on what would normally be in American culture a really no-brainer. Like, it's an opportunity to make money. It's a profitable enterprise, and it's easy to do. That sounds like something that the American economy would embrace. So those are two kind of cultural touchstones. I'm wondering if you could, have you thought about that at all? Kind of how what you're doing is connected to these larger cultural questions or trends? I'd love to hear your
definitely the first point you were talking to about sedentary lifestyle and the streams, and my mind immediately goes to video games nowadays, where it's actually a perfectly reasonable and can be lucrative career now. If you're an elite player at a given video game, they have professional teams for games like Dota, League of Legends, Counter-Strike, and now we're seeing this Fortnite game where they're selling out stadiums for people to go watch video games. So not only can these people watch on Twitch from home, they can sit all day and watch you play, but they can also go to an event where they're buying an $80 ticket to watch people play video games. And it's kind of like this obsession with the elite players. And if you're into a game and you play a game recreationally and you have the chance to watch the top players play, I mean, to me, that's fascinating. I always like to watch somebody who's the best. It doesn't matter what it is.
Sure.
I always think that's fascinating.
Yeah, that really is fascinating. And it is a kind of emerging from this culture of technology and also kind of a more sedentary life, a more simulated life, a more kind of virtual experience of things. It is interesting. What about the kind of puritanical anti-gambling streak? Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think in regards to the, I don't know if we're talking about the people in America or the government. The government regulation, I think, came from more of a money standpoint, where they were having a hard time tracking and taxing online players in the U.S., and they wanted to get it under control and regulate it better, where now everything is done by the book to the cent, where before they had a tough time kind of getting a hold on it. So I think that was why it came from more of a tax perspective than a morality
than
issue
moral.
Where they were against gambling.
Yeah.
But there are always going to be people who can't differentiate poker from other types of gambling and are going to say poker's bad, poker's gambling. And there are certain states where I can imagine it will never be legal. Like, I can't, we're not going to have online poker in Utah ever, I would imagine. It's just a matter of local perspective and mindset. And I don't want to say that people are misinformed about it, but poker is a lot different than blackjack, than roulette, than sports betting, because you're playing a skill game against other people. It's not a lottery ticket. It's not a flipping a coin. It's actually a mind sport.
And like you said, there's comparisons to chess. You wouldn't think the same thing at a worldwide chess tournament.
Yeah. I wonder, though, as we see this kind of loosening around sports betting, you know, that that's going to become more easy to do, more available, more accessible, legal in more areas. I wonder if that's going to loosen up things at all for this related, but like you said, not exactly the same industry.
Yeah, I think governments, it's my opinion, the governments are always going to kind of loosen these regulations when they can to make more money. And the morality thing goes on the back burner. But we are seeing more, especially on the East Coast, more casinos pop up in smaller areas. Where now in Pennsylvania, we have casinos. I play in Washington, D.C. a lot. They've just built a new MGM property down there. They're building a Wynn resort in Boston. So this is stuff that wasn't around 5-10 years ago, and you'd have to get on a plane and fly to Las Vegas or go to Atlantic City, and now people, it's more accessible for them closer to where they live.
As we let you go here, I have one last question. Do you find young players coming to you, men or women, as I understand, many women play as well, coming to you asking for coaching or guidance, or has anybody ever approached you about hiring you as a poker trainer or coach?
Yeah, absolutely. I get a lot of requests for coaching, and I actually have done a little bit of it in the past. I worked with one student who he ended up making it up to number 2 ranking in the world. He actually was very successful. And it's something that happens a lot in poker with top players where they might be paid an hourly wage to work with a student, usually done over Skype or online or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that some players do a lot and others don't. I've never really gravitated towards it where I don't enjoy the coaching. So I'd rather focus on my own game.
Sure.
But it's very common in the poker world, and people pay a lot of money to get coaching from elite players.
Wow. I wonder if sometimes coaching it as well helps you work through scenarios in different ways that maybe you didn't have to think as deeply about if it just kind of was your intuition.
Absolutely. I noticed when I was doing the coaching that I know I do things like I'm talking my way through a hand with a student. And he might stop me and ask, why did you do that? And intuitively in my head, I just always did it and I didn't know why. And then to have to stop and think about it and explain, like, why did I do that? And then you kind of understand how your own mind works a little better, which is always good in poker.
Well, it's an absolutely fascinating conversation, Darren. And
Thank you.
When I talked to your dad, Bill, to get your number, he said, hey, he is your kind of guy. You're going to love talking to him. And just know your parents are so proud of you. Your dad is so proud.
So there is definitely more for us to explore here. I'm hoping we can have another show sometime on esports and maybe even talk to somebody who is one of the greatest people in Fortnite or whatever. But this has really piqued my interest in this whole just crazy phenomenon in our, not just in our country, but in the world, of how people really want to kind of be up close to people doing something they do all the time, which is play a card game or play video games. And that this kind of cult of personality is coming up in this is an industry as well. So I'm hoping this ain't the last time Going Deep looks at sedentary sports.
In 1 month, there was 128 million hours of viewing time on Twitch where people were watching other people play Fortnite.
You've been listening to Going Deep. Sports in the 21st Century from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio, NPR for Western North Carolina. Tell us what you think of the show by emailing us at goingdeep@bpr.org. Make sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @ShoopsGoingDeep.